ദർപ്പണമാർജനം ഭവമഹ ദാവാഗ്നി നിർവാപണം ശ്രേയകൈതവ ചന്ദ്രികാ വിതരണം വിദ്യാവതോ ജീവനം ആനന്ദാംബുദിവർദ്ധനം പ്രതിപദ പൂർണാമൃതാസ്വാദനം സർവാത്മാസ്വപനം വരം വിജയതേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ സങ്കീർത്തനം നാമനാമകാരി ബഹുദാ നിജ സർവശക്തി തത്രാർപ്പിതാ നിമിതാ സ്മരണേന കാല ഏതാദൃശീ തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവൻ മമാവി ദുർദൈവമീദൃശമിഹാജനി നാനുരാഗാഹം തൃണാരവീഷു നീചേന തരോരവീ സഹിഷ്ണുനാ അമാനിനാമാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാഹരി നധനം നജനം നസുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വാ ജഗദീശകാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരീ ഭവദാദ് ഭക്തിരഹൈതുകി ത്വയി ഐ നന്ദതനൂജകിങ്കരാം പതിതാമാം ശമേ ഭവാംബുദോ കൃപയാ തവ പാദപങ്കജസ്ഥിതധൂളീ സദൃശം വിചിന്തയാം നയനം ഗളദശ്രുധാരയാ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിരാ പുളകൈർനിജിതം കദാ വപോ തവന്നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗാഹിതം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായിതം ശൂന്യായിതം ജഗത്സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേണ മേ ആശ്ലിഷ്യവാ പാദരതാം വിനഷ്ടുമാം അദർശനാം അർമഹതാം കരോതു വാം യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദധാ ദുലംബടോ മൽപ്രാണനാഥാസ്തു നയേവ നാകരാം. The subject, what we are going to cover from today for the remaining 8 days, is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the famous prayers of Prahlada. Prahlada's famous prayers. In the Bhagavatam, there are 3 topics in the Bhagavatam. One is what is called stuti. Stuti means glorifications. That is one topic in the Bhagavatam. One topic in the Bhagavatam is stuti. Everywhere you find stuti. Dhruva stuti, Prahlada stuti, Ambarisha stuti. Gobi stuti is what we call as Gobiyagidam. What is Gobi stuti? Gobiyagidam is that. And then Akrura stuti, Kunti Stuti, Bhishma Stuti, all famous. This is all Stuti. Stuti means generally glorifications. That's the from the word Stuti comes the Stotram. Like Dakshinamurti Stotram it is. Narayaniyam is a Stotram. So Stotram comes this word Shruti. Shruti is the source. From Stuti, when Stuti is written in a format like the verses, it becomes a Stotram. Rashmi Narasimha Stotram. So there's Stotram. So Stuti says one aspect of Bhagavatam is Stuti. The other aspect of Bhagavatam is Katha. Story. Isn't it? Katha. Katha you will see everywhere in the Bhagavatam is Katha. Bhagavata Katha you will see. For example, Chitrakedu's Katha. Ajamila's Katha. And similarly the Krishna Katha. In the Dashamaskandam, 10 cantos, all Krishna's Katha. Sri Rama Katha in the 9th canto. And similarly, Palari Mathanam or churning the milk ocean, it's a Katha. They are all the Katha. They are all different Kathas in the Bhagavatam. So, Stutis are there in one side, then there is Katha there. Beyond these two, there is something more important, and the cream of the whole thing is what is called Upadesham. Instructions, direct instructions. Vidura Uddhava Samvadam. And where Vidura has spoken certain things to Uddhava, Maitreya Maharshi and Vidura Samvadam. There, Maitreya Maharshi gives Upadesham. Maitreya Upadesham it's called. Through that Upadesham, message is getting transmitted to Vidura. Krishna Uddhava Samvadam. But through that Krishna Uddhava Samvadam, the Upadesham is getting transmitted to Uddhava from Krishna. So Bhagavatam is these three things: Stuti, Katha, and Upadesham. Upadesham means direct instructions. And these three same topics exist in the Vedam also. Vedam also, the same topics exist. Vedam also you will see in the same way. There's a lot of Katha in the Vedam. And Upakhyanams. For example, this Ajamila Upakhyanam is there in the Vedam. Vritrasura's story, what we read in the Bhagavatam, is there in the Vedam as, there it is called Upakhyanam. Similarly, Stuti also is there in the Vedam. Because when we talk about Vedam, we call them as Rikha means, that's how the word Rigvedam comes, from the word Rik. Rik means Stuti. When we are talking about Vedam, we will call it as Rik. When we talk about Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam is a Puranam, we call it as Stuti. In Vedam, you won't say it as Stuti. But similarly, in the Shruti Gita, what is Shruti Gita? Veda Stuti. Vedam, personified Vedas glorifying Krishna is Shruti Gita. That's for another name for Shruti Gita is Veda Stuti. So, in reality, Vedam also is instructions. But the way it is done is different in everything. That's all it is. Ultimately, the goal of all this is what? To make us spiritual. To bring us self-realization. To get to know the truth, what it is. That's the purpose of all the Vedam is. Purpose of Vedam is to not to get us converted into some another religion. That's not the goal of the Vedam. Goal of the Vedam is to make us aware of the truth in this world. What is the truth in this world? To make that awareness in us, and to, because once you become aware of that, you will act properly in this world and take advantage of this human life and come out of this material life once for all. Attachment to the body, senses, all these kinds will disappear. And to escape ourselves from this problem of birth, death, old age, disease, everything. What like in the case of Parikshit. So, in reality, Srimad Bhagavatam and Vedam is not different. It is one and the same. And that is why Vedam, the message of the Vedam, Veda Artham, the Artham, or Vedam Artham, it is called, the word they used is Upabrahmanam. Upabrahmanam means, whatever that has been given to us, if you explain that to somebody in depth, in detail, because some people require more explanation to understand things. Some people don't. They will catch the message straight away. That depends on your Shraddha Shakti and your Vasanas and all other, so many factors involved in that. So, Upabrahmanam means Vedam tells you something. Upanishad is a part of Vedam. Upanishad is the end of Vedam. Vedantam. Vedantam it is called, isn't it? So, Vedantam is Upanishad, and that Upanishads carry the message. But message is, when it is given to a highly advanced person, because he is so focused on it, he will get the message straight away from the Upanishad. But somebody else who does not have that kind of sharpness or picking up power in him, he needs to be explained in a much more detailed way. And that is called Upabrahmanam. Upabrahmanam means that. That means Upanishad has told us something, and again I am explaining that. Vedavyas, that's what he has done. Rishis have spoken to Upanishads. All the Upanishads are the realization of the Rishis. Isn't it? Angiras, Vasishtha, Vishwamitra, Bharadwaj, Parashurama, Atri. And that, the whole list is there in the Bhagavatam. It's their realizations, what they have spoken is in the form of Upanishads in front of us. Vedavyasa Maharshi has got that message as well. So what he has done, he has expanded that in the form of Bhagavatam. So that is called Upabrahmanam. Upabrahmanam means that. He has expanded that. So people like us will get some entry into that. Some entry into that understanding. So Vedam tells us how we should live in this world. And the same thing Bhagavatam is also telling us how to live in this world. And when Bhagavatam says how to live in this world, it is called Bhagavata Dharma. That's what is called Bhagavata Dharma. Bhagavata Dharma means Vedavyasa Maharshi through Srimad Bhagavatam told us how to live in this world. That is called Bhagavata Dharma. Bhagavadharmam. So, you may ask the question that somebody has to tell me how to live in this world. You may ask that question, isn't it? That because anybody who is born, he is living in this world, isn't it? The only thing is, once you are born, then you know what you have to do, and you do it and live in this world. What is there to talk about it so much? But what Vedam and Upanishads and Bhagavadam is telling us, that if you have learned the art of how to live in this world without getting another body again, then your life and life in this world is a success. Suppose you had lived in this world and you live in such a way that you do not create another material body again, in that case, such a life, he say, his life is successful and worthwhile. So, Vedam, from the Vedic point of view, life in this world has only one goal, to close this business of birth and death. That is the clear definition in the Vedam of the purpose of life in this world. If you have lived a life in this world in that way, then your life is successful. It's not a failure. But if you have not succeeded in doing that, instead you have worked and created hundreds of bodies for future to come, then that life is a total failure. This is how Vedam looks at our life. Vedam means Vedam, Upanishads, Puranam, all Shastram looks at us in that way. That is why they tell us how to live in this world in a particular way. For this reason only. That if you haven't succeeded in creating another material body again, because already there is enough vasanas inside, we have created more to it, means the end result will be that to get all these vasanas out, you have to keep on accepting different bodies. Remember yesterday that story I mentioned about Janaki's story, how they lived in this world, that they studied Yoga Vasishtam to that extent, they understood the message seriously. Therefore, they didn't get involved in the world to that extent. Did the very minimum what's necessary to maintain the body. And inside they grew very fast. The growth was inside, not outside. Inside they grow so well that eventually when they left this world, they left in total peace. They didn't have to, there was no question of coming back there. Because you could see in them, all the vasanas are exhausted here itself. What to talk about going after in the next life. By observing them, people understood that they had no vasanas inside anymore. That was their strength, their spiritual strength. They lived a life like that. Full of austerities, full of penances. And not connecting with the world at all. Freeing themselves aloof from everything else. So Yoga Vasishtam begins with such a verse. It says, Jadaha ye janmani jantuva sadhu jividaha. Otherwise it is Gardhavaha, he says. E Jadaha who are born, ye jivati jantuvad sadhu jividaha. If they live like a sadhu in this world and get through this life, sadhu means what? Sadhu means one who does not care for the material life. Material is concerned about the body. You live a life like that, not concerned about the body so much. To the maximum extent, to live a life free from this body. While living here, to live a life free from this body. That should be possible. That is where vairagyam comes, that is where knowledge comes, jnanam comes, bhakti comes, everything is necessary for that. So, they have lived like that. So, Yoga Vasishtam says, who is saying this? Ramachandra himself. Sri Ramachandra himself is saying this, that he says, the sadhu jivita, otherwise he says, the gardhavaha, kavida, or what does he say, the donkey, whatever that is, he says. It is his life that is. That means you shouldn't get another life again. That is the success of life. If you don't get another life again, that is the success. That's what he's saying. So, those who have lived like that, and those who have understood, those who have understood that this life can be used for that purpose. Those who understood that this life can be used for that purpose. So therefore, they are the rishis. Remember, I mentioned this earlier also many times, that that's not that they didn't know how to advance in the material life. They knew more than what the modern world knew. But they didn't choose that path. They decided to go in the other direction. Remember that story about Bharadwaj? Bharadwaj Maharshi, the same, I'll repeat that. Bharadwaj Maharshi was in the ashram, in the forest. Ramachandra was in Dandakaranyam. He is on his way. He has left Ayodhya. From Ayodhya, all the Ayodhya Vasis, they wanted to bring Ramachandra back. They all requested Bharata to come and go together and invite Ramachandra to come back to Ayodhya again. So they are all going, and they all got to this river, Sarayu River. When they got to Sarayu River, Bharadwaja Maharshi's ashram is there. It's the first place where they had their halt. When they halted there, Bharadwaja Maharshi understood that there was such a huge number of people had come along with Bharata. And Bharata told Bharadwaj that we are going to bring Ramachandra back to Ayodhya again. We cannot live without him, this, that, and the other, he was saying. Bharata was saying that. So Bharadwaj Maharshi says that you have all come, it's very nice. I will arrange prasadam and a place to stay first. As a proper rishi, he is staying. And Bharadwaj, out of his yogic power, created a palace there for them to stay, and a feast arranged, cooked and served by the apsaras women from the heavenly planets. Bharadwaj could do that. He had such a yogic power in him. And when he did that, after the feast, the Ayodhya Vasis are saying, we didn't know that these facilities were here. If we knew this before, we would not go back to Ayodhya. And Rama is concerned, we will see him later. There is no rush to go to Ramachandra. All the facilities are here. Why should we go? Here is the best place to stay. This is us. We are like this. In our spiritual life also, we are like that. Wherever there is the best prasadam and the best sense gratification, you will find the maximum devotees also. That you can't change. That is the law of the world, no matter where it is. Wherever is the best prasadam, best facilities, devotees will say that is the best place to practice spiritual life. That's because the vasanas inside will dictate that. They can't change that. That's till one day they have to realize this best prasadam and best other association there is the best enough. It's not good enough. So in the same way here, rishis have spoken these things. Bharadwaja Maharshi offered them such a feast. They couldn't believe it. They have never had a feast like that in their life. And this rishi, look at him, this grown beard, matted hair, body is like this, only the bones are there. And what was he wearing? Some bark of the tree and no decorations in the body, rudraksham, the mala in the neck, and the yoga danda, that is the power of yoga inside and him, and always absorbed in the truth. That is Bharadwaja Maharshi. Now, if he wanted all these material comforts, if it was important, he could have lived like that if he wanted. But they didn't choose that. They chose the other life. Why? The reason is this. That is why I'm saying that when the knowledge takes over a person, then he can't act like us. We act looking where is the best facility. Why? Because our senses are driven like that. We have got used to it. And then we say, oh, no, I need this, I need that. Without this, how can I manage? I can't do this. I'm not ready for it, we say. We are not ready, so this is not coming. That's all it is. So here, rishis are saying here, two things they told us. Two things he has spoken to us. Rishis gave us this understanding. First thing, you have to know what you have to know in this world. And you have to know what you have to do in this world. Two things. First thing, you have to know what you have to know. And second thing, you have to do what you have to do. And that is why, and the first thing, they gave stress on knowledge. On knowledge. If your knowledge is all false, then everything what you do later will be wrong. Is it not? Because of the false knowledge only, we are doing wrong things in this world. wrong thing in this world. So these two things, they gave importance, knowledge and action. Depending on your knowledge, you will act. Therefore, the knowledge has to be perfect. If the knowledge is perfect, the action will also be perfect. Action will be perfect. So these two things, they gave importance. That means, in Shastram, when you will say, Jnanam and Karmam. Jnanam and Karmam. Jnanam and Karmam. So, in two ways. In two ways it's spoken. Now, with this Karmam, they also mention there that important is Jnanam in this. Because Karmam is dependent on Jnanam. Karmam is dependent on Jnanam. So, and Karmam, when you have put that into practice in life, then it is called Bhakti. That is when Bhakti comes. Reality, there is only these two important things, knowledge and action. Bhagavad Gita also is based on the same principle. But when you want to engage that Karmam properly, in the proper way, that becomes Bhakti. Or other words, in the Shastram, it's called Upasana. Upasana is the word used in the Vedam. Karmakandam, Jnanakandam, Upasanakandam, it's called. In three different ways. Karmakandam, Jnanakandam, Upasanakandam. But Upasana, when it is spoken in the form, in the Puranas, it becomes Bhakti. Only terminology changes because of the level of the Shastram. Upanishads and Vedam are on a much higher level. So therefore, the word Upasana is used there. Because upasana is a little complex word. When you perform upasana, it means that the person is very educated in the knowledge of spiritual life. It is he who performs upasana. That means he has gone a very higher level. And in that level, he is executing spiritual life. Therefore, it's called upasana. But in a lower level, ordinary people, when they execute karmam, it becomes bhakti. It becomes bhakti. That's the difference between bhakti and upasana. Upasana is on a much higher level. That means by then, in upasana level, you have gone very high in your bhakti. Therefore, it is called upasana anymore. There is no, selfishness in there. Selfish interest. All that's gone. Purely, you are executing from the platform of, you can say, parabhakti stage. It is in that level you are executing sadhana, and that is what is called upasana. That's what is called upasana. So, in the Vedam, the earlier part is all about karmam and upasana, which is called karmakandam. You know the karmakandam, what we talk about in the Vedam? Is all the majority of Vedam is this karmakandam. Karmakandam. You may have heard this word karmakandam. Sometimes devotees say something when you say, he says, oh, that's karmakandam. He says, not knowing anything or talking stupid things without understanding what does this karmakandam means. You have to remember this, that karmakandam is not something to be ignored and rejected like that. Karmakandam is a very, 80% of Vedam is karmakandam. That is the interesting side of it. And we say, oh, I don't care about this, all karmakandam, he says. If you say something else, say karmakandam, I don't care. It's not important for me. I am a devotee, so I'm above all that. So, some fine, funny understanding people build up from all these things. What can you do? Sometimes it's like that. So, karmakandam in the Vedam has been a major part of the Vedam, and it is expanded and explained by Jaimini. Jaimini is the person who expanded karmakandam in a big way. And this Jaimini is Vedavyasa Maharshi's disciple, close disciple, Jaimini. Jaimini is known for, well known. And all the time when Yudhishthira and Ambarish, Prithu Maharaj, and if whom you look in the Bhagavatam, you will see all these great personalities. Did you see they were all performing sacrifices? Ashwamedham, Rajasuyam, and Mahabali performed 100 Ashwamedham. Shukracharya was the priest. All what that is, what is that all? All karmakandam it is. So how can you say that they were all doing nonsense, were they? And you don't care about karmakandam. How can you reject karmakandam like that? All these great souls, they were at that time, in their time, Karmakandam was the process mainly in existing at that time. Prajina Barhis was into Karmakandam in a big way. That's why he got that name, Prajina Barhis. Similarly, Prithu, 100 times Ashwamedham he performed, Karmakandam. Mahabali performed Karmakandam. 100 Ashwamedham he performed. Is it not? 100 Ashwamedham to perform, you can imagine the effort behind it. One Ashwamedham is difficult today. To get those people who had that qualifications and all the articles necessary for performing that Ashwamedham. You can't even imagine. Unless you have people who know about it, how can you do it? Suppose I want to do an Ashwamedham and say I have got the money, £1,000,000 with me. I say to somebody, I want to do an Ashwamedham sacrifice. But if there is nobody who knows about it, what can you do? So these great emperors, kings, they maintained those people so well that they could look after them for performing their sacrifices, Ashwamedham and all that. Ashwamedham is one of the most famous. Ashwamedham, Adhirashtram, Agnihotram, Rajasuyam, Vajapayam, these are all different sacrifices in the, there are hundreds of them, important ones and less important ones. So the Purvam Uttaram, that means the first portion, the beginning portion and the end portion, you can say. The first part is all about, the first part, Purvabhagam is all karmam and upasana. Karmam and upasana. Karmakandam and upasanakandam is the first part of the Vedam. And remaining part, the end part is jnanam. End part is jnanakandam. So karmakandam and upasanakandam is the first part. Jnanakandam is the second part. So, but when you read it, you shouldn't think that Vedam is structured in that way. It's not structured that way. Just like when you say initial part, later part, you may think that the initial part is all written there, everything finishes, and the second part begins. Not that way separated. Everything is mixed together. In the Vedam, everything is mixed. But it is to be understood in that way. Vedic scholars speak like that. They say that this part, which is in Purva Bhagam, that Jnana Karmakandam and Upasanakandam go together, which is the primary part, and Jnanakandam is the secondary part. Is the secondary part. Similarly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Upasana is called Bhakti. In the Bhagavatam, it is called Bhakti. So, what it means is, through Karmam, you have to purify yourself and develop Chitta Shuddhi. Chitta Shuddhi means purification of our vasanas inside. That has to happen through Karmam. And if you do that, what will happen is, you will get the strength for Upasana. That is the relationship. Karmam and Upasana has a strong relationship. Karmam is for purification. And once you are purified, you will become strong in your Upasana. You will become strong in your Upasana. This relationship is very important. Because in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this principle is very much explained in the Bhagavatam. That became in the form of Bhagavata Dharma. Bhagavatam Dharma. So, Upasana means Bhakti. And if Bhakti is not there, you won't get fully purified. Karmam creates Chitta Shuddhi. Chitta Shuddhi means Karmam helps up to a limit. Karmam can help. If your Karmam is properly executed, that Karmam will purify to a certain level, that you will get certain strength to do Upasana or Bhakti. Upasana, that is what Karmam does. Do you know what I am saying? That Karmam bring you up to a certain point and leave you there. What is that point? The point is this, that it creates enough Chitta Shuddhi inside, enough to get serious about Upasana or Bhakti. Upasana or Bhakti. That is where Karmam leaves you there. Karmam leaves you there. So, and then when you execute bhakti, that is when all vasanas leaves you. All vasanas completely leaves you. First thing is, If your karnam is not pure, bhakti will never come. Bhakti will never come. If karnam is not pure, your bhakti will never come. You will never get purified. You will never get purified. And if you are not pure inside, if you are not pure inside, knowledge will not manifest. Knowledge will not manifest there. So, whatever we may do without understanding of the Shastram or the principle behind it, if we leave behind all these things, and if we do things according to our mind and start organizing things, I know better what the Shastram, what Shastram, he says. People say like that. I know what I have to do. Bhakti. And if I start doing things like that, the result is that jnanam won't happen. And so, what? How do you know at different levels who stands? If somebody who has got very strong desire to realize the self, and he is only doing that through knowledge, through whichever way he is working for that all the time, in all, and not giving importance to anything else, you can more or less take it that he has already already transcended karmam and upasana. He has already gone beyond than that. He has gone, crossed over karmam and upasana. That also you will notice in some people. If you are careful, those personalities who are practicing spiritual life seriously, in some of them you will find this. That their knowledge and their hunger for knowledge is so strong that the way they are going on analyzing and thinking about various things, that mananam going on all the time, and nididhyasanam from that, and if you look at their way of life in this world, you can straight away detect this in them, this thing, that they have gone beyond their karmam and upasana stage. They have gone beyond than that. So, if you look into the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying this. Only thing is, these subtleties, if you don't seriously take it and start thinking about it, it will never be understood. That is the problem. If you look into the 6th chapter, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the 44th verse, I think it is. He's saying here, Purva abhyasena tenaiva hriyadehi avashopisa jityasu api yogasya shabda brahmadi vartate. See that verse? It's a direct explanation of what we were saying here. The symptom of a person is saying, Purva abhyasam. Purva abhyasam means somewhere in his previous life, or even in this life, in his previous times, Purva abhyasena tenaiva, that hriyadehi avashopisa, by virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles. Hriyadehi avashopisa. Hriyadehi avashopisa. When Krishna is saying like that, always when yogam, yogam, when Krishna says, generally it refers to knowledge. Because knowledge is the thing, the goal at the end. That realization has to happen. That's why, Hriyadehi avashobisa jityasu. He says, even without seeking them, even without seeking them, he gets attracted to them, to the knowledge. Even without seeking them, he gets attracted to them. And such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. Of course, in the translation, it is said like that. What it actually is saying here is, if you look at the meaning of the words, jityasu api yogasya shabda brahmam adivartate. Adivartate means he has transcended all these things. He has already gone beyond. And we can see the PowerPoint. Prabhupada mentions here, first word itself, advanced yogis are not very much attracted to the rituals of the scriptures. You see that? Advanced yogis are not attracted, are not very much attracted to the rituals of the scriptures. Rituals of the scriptures. If we are getting attracted to the rituals a lot, what does that mean? It means that vasana has not gone from inside, shuddhi hasn't happened, purity hasn't happened inside. That's what that means, the opposite side of it. So Krishna is saying here, for that, now, that does not mean we should condemn rituals. That's not what it means. What it is saying, because in different people are in different level. In the particular level, you need all that. You can't say that, oh, because of that, because I'm not advanced, that's why this all rituals to me, so I'm not going to have any rituals anymore. No, it is Krishna is saying here that I've given them this license, jijnyasu. You see the word Krishna has used there? Jijnyasu abhi yogasya shabda brahma adivartade. They come to that platform of jijnyasu. Therefore, Krishna has given them the license. You don't have to worry about karmam and upasana anymore. You've gone that stage. You've gone beyond than that. So, you are on a higher level. So, you don't have to worry about those rituals anymore. That's what Krishna is saying there. So, Krishna has given them this license to do it. Therefore, you will see, when you look at those people who are doing that, they will not be very particular about everything like the way we are particular. For example, on Ekadashi day, we will stick to the Ekadashi principles, rules, regulations and everything. But they don't have to follow that to that rigidly. But you shouldn't think that, oh, if Krishna says, yes, Krishna has given me the license, from tomorrow I can do what I want. That's not what it means. This is all from Andaryami inside will dictate that for them. So, once you have that kind of jijnyasa or inquisitiveness for knowing the self in that level, not the intellectual jijnyasa, do not get it wrong. It's not the intellectual jijnyasa. So, you have to remember the difference between these two. Intellectual jijnyasa is like this. Something is going on in that hall. Let me go see what they've got to say. That's called intellectual jijnyasa. Not that. That is intellectual it is. And then what they do is they'll come, listen and hear, and then they will evaluate something in their mind. Oh yeah, some of the things I agree with what he says, but many other things I can't agree with him. In this way you make a remark and then you walk away from there. A lot of people do like that also. And that kind of jijnyasa is not the proper jijnyasa. Proper jijnyasa, that is called intellectual jijnyasa. Intellectual jijnyasa. Jijnyasa, I think the jijnyasa actually, like other words, has no equal English translation. Jijnyasa is a word in the Shastram. But in the translations, you will use the word inquisitiveness, isn't it? Athado Brahma Jijnyasa. They say call it as inquisitiveness. But anyway, we have to live with that. So, jijnyasa is that. Just like when you are hungry, oh, let me have some prasadam. In the similar way, if you come and say, oh, there is something spoken from the Bhagavatam, let me see what he has got to say. That's not jijnyasa. That is intellectual jijnyasa. Just to hear and evaluate and then go. That's it. But here, Atma Vidya, knowledge of the self, how to experience it and how to absorb in it throughout the life, that Shraddha, that is called this Atma Jijnyasa. The Shraddha in a person to come, to hear, to experience and to carry it throughout the whole life, keep on absorbing it inside and to analyzing inside and realizing it inside continuously. That is that Shraddha, that is called that Jijnyasa. And that means when you are having that anubhuti means realizations, automatically your chittam means your subtle body, should get absorbed in that all the time, continuously in that vastu. Vastu is this Atma, Andaryami. It should enter there, it should enter into the Tattvam. And the Upanishads, how they explain that, on what stage that is, suppose you have ghee in a pot there, full of ghee. And the ghee is melted and it is very liquid. And when you pour that ghee into another pot, you have noticed that it will flow continuously, isn't it? Continuously like a stream, it will flow. It will continuously flow like a stream. So similarly, in the same way, if your thoughts inside, and the mind and the heart, whichever we call it, that if it is completely absorbed in what Krishna has spoken, in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and never going away from that to anything else in this world, not get attracted by anything else. That power, if one gets that power, that is in the Shastram they will use the word anusandhanam. That's the word, anusandhanam. In the Bhagavatam that word is there, anusandhanam spoken. Mukti ki tanyadharupam sarubena vyavasthiti. And then, where else he says that in the Bhagavatam itself, I think it mentions this word anusandhanam somewhere else. That this power to do this anusandhanam. Anusandhanam means that like the ghee is flowing from the other pot to this pot continuously, in a similar way, your own thoughts and the mind and everything running after the truth. And because you know that there is a truth, and you believe that the truth is in the Shastram, if you study, analyze it, go follow that process, it will be revealed by the Antaryami inside. You are so firmly convinced that that means you are not able to give up that anymore. You can't give it up. And that becomes your whole life then. And then you can say you have the power of anusandhanam. Power of anusandhanam. Anusandhanam is the word they used. So, and that power, when it develops inside a person, anusandhanam, power, it is called Shraddha. That's called Shraddha. We will use different words in the Shastram, depending on which stage it is. So Shraddha is the word Jityasa, then the word anusandhanam, and now the word Shraddha. So, that is how to explain that, what it all means. In the what is bhakti? Asked a question. To Acharya Swamiji, this question was raised. What is bhakti? You know what his answer was? So swarubanu anusandhanam bhakti ritya bhidiyate, he says. Bhakti is when you are chasing to realize the self inside. That is bhakti, he said. He didn't say bhakti means you go to the temple, offer the flowers and do the arati. That is a part of sadhana bhakti. But bhakti's precise definition is when you are inquiring after the truth to realize who you are, to find out who you are, and in that process, if you realize the self, that is bhakti. He is the greatest devotee. So, swarupanu anusandhanam bhakti riti abhidhiyate. That is how he defined bhakti. So, swarupanu anusandhanam bhakti riti abhidhiyate. When you are after your swarupam, swarupam means your own identity, who you are, knowing that who you are, that is bhakti. And if you are working for that is bhakti. So swarupanu anusandhanam bhakti ritya vidhiyate. So, like you can see here, that jityasa, the word we were talking about, jityasa means your intense desire or hunger or thirst inside, jityasa. For what? To know the Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya is a jityasa. When will that happen? When the chittam is pure. Inside is pure. So, when do you know that chittam is pure? How will you know that chittam is pure? How would you know that somebody's chittam is pure? Sometimes people say, why do I chant the holy name? Why do I go to temple? What's the need to go to temple? Why do I have to observe all these rules and regulations and Ekadashi and all other things? All these things are not necessary, they say. They say that if your chittam is pure, shuddham, pure, we don't need all these things. They say like that, isn't it? Important thing is, I should be very pure inside. I am not sinful. I am a very pure person. I haven't done. My heart is very pure. Sometimes people say like that. They say, my heart is very pure. Why should I go to temple? Why should I go and waste 4 or 5 hours listening to Bhagavatam? I am pure. Why? I don't need all that. I don't need to go to the temple. I don't need to chant the holy name. I am so pure. I don't need all these things. What you have to remember is that when they speak like that, there is some impurity inside which is very deep. Who are speaking like that? Because you are thinking that you are very pure inside. And there is no higher impurity than that in a person. When somebody says like that I am very pure inside, there is no other higher impurity than that, than saying that. You see, so that is why great devotees, they have sung this in their songs. Tukaram says in one of the abhangs about this impurity, he says there that everybody is paying obeisances to me, saying that I am a great devotee. Tukaram is saying this, that I am a great devotee. And they are thinking that I have achieved something in my life, and they are worshipping me in that way. But for me, I am thinking, and when I see all this worship, and when they are honoring me all this, I am also started thinking that I have become a great devotee. Tukaram is saying this. He says, I feel that I have become a great devotee and my heart must be very pure. I am thinking like this. Because the whole world is worshipping me. They are making me this impression in me, creating this impression in me that I am very pure, he says. And but he says to Panduranga, that is not the truth. He says to Panduranga, he says, that is not the truth. My mind, I know how bad it is, he says. But this world, because it is telling me that I am a great devotee, and I am chanting always, so they are saying that I am a great soul. And they have put this impression in my head that I must be a great devotee, my heart must be very pure. But Panduranga, it is not so, he says. This is devotee. He recognized that capacity. And if you are getting that thought inside, when somebody says to you that you are a great devotee or Mahatma or Sadhu or whatever it is, inside if you know that, you are not that, and if your thought is coming like that, that is the first step of this purification. First step of the purification. Because only if you know what your vasanas are inside, what your state of mind is, you can't purify. But instead, falsely, if you think that, oh, I am this, I have that, then what will happen? There is no possibility of purification. Manikyavachakar, who wrote Tiruvachakam, he says this. He's crying in the Tiruvachakam. He says, I am thinking, I am always impure. I am such a sinful person. All my words are lies, he said. All my words are lies. And my life itself is a lie, he says. And what is the symptom of bhakti, he says. And I know that I don't have any bhakti. Manikyavachakar is saying this. That he is one of the famous Shaiva saints. Apar, Sambandar, Manikyavachakar, Sundararar, all they are the famous saints, Lord Shiva's devotees. Manikyavachakar is the one who sang this famous Tiruvachakam. Lord Shiva himself wrote it down and took it to his own temple in Chidambaram. All these things, there's a big story about that. So, only thing is, I know that, Manikyavachakar says, I don't have any bhakti. I don't have any bhakti, I know that, he says. So, from Tukaram's life, Manikyavachakar's life and all, you can understand that only if you know that my heart is impure, only in that I can purify it. But if I don't know that my heart is impure, how can I purify? So first thing, I have to know that my heart is impure. That's the first thing. So that is the first thing to know. Then Shuddham. Shuddhi, that's the word. And when Shuddhi becomes on a higher degree, it becomes Vishuddhi. Vishuddhi. In the Bhagavatam, the word used is Vishuddhi. In few places you will see Krishna using the word Vishuddhi. Look into the 11th canto, where he says that, I think it is in the 11th or 10th chapter.
Mayodide shavahida swadharme shumadashraya varnashrama kulacharam akamalma samacharil. Anvikshedavishuddhalma దేహీనాం విషయాత్మనాం గుణేషు తత్వధ్యానేన సర్వ ఆరంభ విపర్యయం.
కృష్ణ ఇస్ సేయింగ్ అన్వీక్షేత విశుద్ధాత్మ. ఫస్ట్ థింగ్ ఇన్ ద ఫస్ట్ వర్డ్స్ ఈ సేయింగ్, ద నంబర్ వర్డ్స్ 1 and 2 ఇన్ ది 10th చాప్టర్,
ఫస్ట్ థింగ్ స్వధర్మేషు, వన్స్ ధర్మం, మదాశ్రయ, డిపెండింగ్ ఆన్ కృష్ణ,
డిపెండింగ్ ఆన్ కృష్ణ, దాట్ హీ విల్ కృష్ణ విల్ పుట్ ఇట్ ఎ కండిషన్ ఎవ్రీవేర్, డిపెండింగ్ ఆన్ కృష్ణ ఎగ్జిక్యూట్ ద ధర్మం. అండ్ దెన్ వర్ణాశ్రమ కులాచారం అగామాత్మా సమాచరయలు. వర్ణాశ్రమ ధర్మం ఇస్ ద ధర్మం దాట్ వాజ్ స్పోకన్ ఇన్ ది భగవద్గీత అండ్ భాగవతం, టు ఫాలో దాట్. అగామాత్మా సమాచరయలు. అన్వీక్షేత విశుద్ధాత్మ, ఇఫ్ హీ హాస్ ఫాలోడ్ దాట్ హీ విల్ కమ్ టు ది స్టేట్ విశుద్ధాత్మ, హీ విల్ గెట్ దట్ ప్యూరిఫికేషన్. And then what is the advantage from that?
Dehinam vishayalpanam guneshu tattvadhyanena sarvarambha viparyayam.
The advantage of that is, he says, that Vishuddhalpa, he will understand one important thing in this world. This is all inside, not outside. What happens inside? He will realize, in this world people are working very hard to become happy. But although they are working hard to become happy, the result is all distress at the end. End result is distress. There is nobody can deny that. Nobody has left this world in the happy state, is there? We will die at different places in different ways. But you couldn't say that I left this world in a happy state, because by then the body has given you enough problem, and the mind has given you enough problem. More than anything else, the world has given you enough problem. You couldn't do anything what you wanted to do here. And you leave this world in distress. Everybody leaves this world in distress, one way or the other. Sometimes even see spiritual personalities, even they have understood that this is not the place to be. They will openly say this. But as Prabhupada says, you make the best use of a bad bargain. That's all you can do here. You can't do anything else than that. Trying to think that everything can be repaired and fixed here is maya. It won't work. So that's what Krishna is saying there. Anvikshetha Vishuddhalpma, what he will know is Dehinam Vishayalpanam. Dehinam Vishayalpanam means those who are addicted to sense enjoyment. Guneshu Tattva Dhyanena Sarva Arambha Viparyayam. These people, if you have become pure inside, the first symptom of that, sarvam arambham viparyayam, you won't get involved in anything in this world. Sarva arambham viparyayam, you will free yourself from all other endeavor in this world. But that will only happen when you are Vishuddhalpa. But when vasana is inside, you won't be able to leave it. Vasanas will say, no, what Vishuddhalpa, let's do, this has to be done. You'll go in that direction. So that is what Krishna is saying here also, that Vishuddhalpa means that that chittam, that shuddhi, chitta shuddhi, that if a person knows that I'm not pure, then only you can do something about it. So he will, and that you shouldn't think in a aupadhyam. Aupadhyam means an upadhi level. You can't think like this. You have to think in the paramarthika level. Aupadhyaya level means upadhi. Upadhi level means in the level of body, mind, intelligence and all. That is not where the purity is. Purity we are talking about is in the absolute level, paramarthika level. Or swarupa jnanam, or in the knowledge of the self. In that level, I am Nityam, Shuddham, Buddham, Mukta Swarupam. Eternal, pure, fully conscious and always liberated. That awareness, if it starts coming to us, then you will start realizing that purity is coming. Purity is coming. That is the symptom of that. When that purity comes inside, we will become more aware of our own purity, which is Nitya, Shuddha, Buddha, Mukta Swarupam. Eternal, pure, fully conscious, always liberated. That's because that's what we discussed last few days as the nature of the soul, isn't it? And you will also see that not only you are pure inside, not in the upadhi. Upadhi means body, mind, intelligence, ego. That is all upadhi. In upadhi level, you will never be pure. Remember that also. Upadhi level, you can't be pure. You know this body. You can use the best things in this world available. All the toiletries and all the, what's available, Garnier or whatever. That's it. Everything you use, and will you say this body will become pure? Again, it will smell if you don't bathe one day. So, upadhi level, it is not possible to become pure. Similarly, the mind. No matter how much you stay in chanting the holy name, studying Bhagavatam, everything, this mind will trip one day, go in another direction, and it will become impure again. Same thing with intelligence, same thing with ego, same thing with the senses. So, body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, they are all our upadhis. Upadhi level, you will never become pure. Only in the absolute level, in the platform of the soul, that is what Krishna is saying here, that chitta shuddhi, when it happens, purity is happening in the consciousness, you are getting purified. That is why, that time what will happen to you is, you will start realizing that nothing to do with this body, I am different from this body. Similarly, in all others also, you will see the presence of the self in them. Presence of the self. So that means you have become to the platform of the soul, and you will start experiencing others also in the platform of the soul. Platform of the soul. That's a big difference there. For example, if I am thinking I am this body, if I am thinking I am this body, I will never be able to say that I will become pure. Never. And I'm true. It's true with everybody in the world. Even in spite of your best efforts, this body will start stinking next day if you don't bathe one day. Is it not? It will all look beautiful now, but and you know because you put everything available in the market on the body and present it to the world. Prabhupada used to say, "You dress, you eat for yourself and dress for others." He said, "That's how he would say. You dress for others." Because the rest of the world, when they look at you, they should think, oh, you look very good. Oh, you're wearing a nice t-shirt here, or you're wearing a good suit, or a nice tie. In the office, this is the constant conversation, isn't it? What dress you've got. So, that's a different world. So, in the level of the body, you can never become pure. And if you are thinking you are the body, you will never become pure. If you're thinking you are the mind, you will never become pure. It's never possible. And if you think you are the ahankaram or false ego inside, you will never become pure. So either in the body level or in the mental level or in the false ego level, you will never become able to say that you have become pure. So, but if the soul wakes up, if the knowledge of the self wakes up, self-realization happens, then then what will happen is that if that wakes up inside, he will say, he won't say that he is pure, he will say everybody is pure. That is the difference in that realization. Do you see what I'm saying? Then there's a big difference there. When you clean the body and you say you are pure, you will only say about your body. And immediately you will compare others and say, others are all impure, I am much more pure than, I am a Brahmin, I am pure, he will say. I have taken 3 times a bath today. And I'm bearing everything pakka, as they say. So, this way you will go in that direction. But that is not purity. That purity is never perfect. Same thing with the mind, same thing with the ahankaram also, ego also. But, if self-realization and knowledge of the self is becoming stronger inside, and antaryami is reacting to your sadhana and upasana, and also your cultivation of the knowledge of the self and practice, shravanam, mananam, everything. If antaryami slowly starts reacting from inside, in that case, you will become pure, and that purity is proper purity, and the symptom of that is, in others also, you will see the same purity, what you have inside. That means, what does that mean? Raga dvesham quietly disappears from inside. That is why Krishna mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita like that. The nature of the knowledge of the self is such, it is able to not only purify yourself, even others. It purifies us. So, everything becomes pure. Therefore, where is bhakti then? Where is the upasana? So, karmam, when we talk about karmam, it is all in the platform of the body. It's all in the platform of the body. Upasana or bhakti is always all in the platform of the mind. In the platform of the mind, whereas knowledge is in the platform of the soul. That is the difference. You see, karmam is always through the body, isn't it? In the platform of the body. And bhakti is always in the platform of the mind, whereas knowledge is always in the platform of the soul. That is why initially when we discuss knowledge of the self, spiritual knowledge, and many chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, Ekadasha Skandam and all that, because we are in the platform of the body and the mind, we don't feel any connection with that knowledge, what is spoken there. But because it is in the platform of the self, platform of the Atma, the knowledge, therefore, and Jnanam is there, Karmam is in the Shariram, body, and Bhakti is in the heart, in the mind, and Jnanam is in the Atma. Jnanam is in the Atma. So, therefore what Vedam did, how the Rishis have formulated all this, how deep their thoughts have to be to come with these conclusions. We are such gross people, we can't even understand what they are talking about. They are saying to us, because you are in the platform of the body, do karmam. Do karmam. Because you are in the platform of the body, that's the reason. Because you are in the platform of the body, you do the karmam. And so, Rishis, those who are in that platform, they have given certain instructions for them how to live in this world. And in that way, they have created Mimamsa philosophy. So you can't throw away Mimamsa now, you can see. Because those who are in the platform of the body, and those who are identifying with the body, they require that Mimamsa philosophy, Karmakandam. And that is why Rishis created Karmakandam for that purpose. We'll discuss tomorrow in detail. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Tomorrow is 6 o'clock start.